welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
So, what do you have for us, Bill?
Well, Aaron, we have a sponsor this hour. Is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And right now, they've got a full stock of tractors, mowers, Z-mowers, attachments, you name it. Go up and see them. Anything John Deere, they can take care of the problem. And they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Give them a call.
The budding metropolis of Shasta Lake?
Budding metropolis, mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm. And their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at, is it the web or is it the interweb? that's the new thing. Yeah, they're on the interweb at papemachinery.com. I want to keep up with the times and all that. I don't want to seem like I'm old or anything. I know all the new stuff.
Literally like a captive here.
What are you doing? You tighten yourself up?
I don't know. I got cords all over the place.
Cords all over the place.
All right. So we thought we'd depart from the stupid bowl today and talk about prison.
Hey, that's enough of that. I watched a halftime show.
As long as you're not in it, we're good. Thought we would take a little break. I have actually, in full disclosure,
isn't it the Giants and the Knicks? Who's playing anyway?
Warriors.
Sure. The Warriors, that's right.
Yeah, Warriors. Yeah. I have spoken with these guys about this a little bit. I've never met Lanny, but I've met Josh. And Bill knows nothing about this, so it's kind of fun. We're in different educational places, and I guarantee you the public doesn't know anything about what's going on.
I drove by a prison one time. That's about as close as I've ever been to a prison.
That's actually a good thing.
Yeah. I want to keep it that way.
I checked that years ago just to make sure.
Yeah, oh, you did.
Yeah, that you'd only driven by.
You checked
your
resume, huh?
Make sure he's only driven by. So these guys are up at the Federal Correction Institution at Herlong, California. It's outside of Susanville and far northern California for people who are listening out of the state. But this issue is not just at this prison. This is a Bureau of Prisons issue. And so I'm sure we'll have lots of acronyms and we'll try not to speak, try to make sure that none of this is in code. But both these guys have a lot of experience. Josh is from Northern California. He spent 6 years in the Air Force after high school, and then he joined the Bureau of Prisons in 2010. He's a current union vice president at FCI Herlong. Lanny Carey, he's from the San Joaquin Valley, and he spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. So before we get carried away on prison, thank you both for your service. That is awesome. And he joined the Bureau of Prisons back in 2001. So, and he's been at a couple of different ones. I don't know if he'll have any need to tell us about that, but I figure they'll tell us what they want us to know. Just for easy math, this will exhaust all my information about Herlong, but there are 1,500, it says, anyway, according to Wikipedia. It's male offenders, medium security, 1,513 inmates with 1,400 and some at the actual facility and 68 at the camp. So my question always is, what is medium security? Like, what's the worst thing at medium security? So who are you dealing with before we get too far down the trail? Hi, fellas.
Me? Medium security is, in the Bureau of Prisons, they use different means to, based on age, based on the offense, criminal history, to calculate out a number that determines their security level. So the medium is, just kind of sets the security parameters of the facility, the requirements. That's where we are. We're just right in the middle. They have USPs, ADMACs, and then low securities, obviously, and each one just requires a different set of security parameters.
But inmates can work their way down from a high to a medium, which we have a lot of those inmates at our facility.
But didn't they already commit the crime? Like, how do you work?
Yeah, by the point system that the Bureau of Prison uses, they've worked their way down to mediums.
So if they committed, what would be considered a
what's like a bad medium security?
Yeah, well, like high security. What would they have to do to end up in your place if they were high security reduced to medium?
So when they reduce, there's a lot of ways they reduce. So just by being in prison for multiple years, when your age, as you age, your point system goes down. The agency also does management variables, which if you haven't had any kind of disciplinary history while in prison, they'll actually management variable you down to a lower security level.
Hmm. And what types of federal crimes are we talking about?
Everything. Yes.
I think a big misconception about federal prison is these are white-collar crimes. However, you have murderers and drug dealers inside of the institution. You have sex offenders inside of our institution.
Wow.
I had asked somebody once about, like, what was the worst medium security thing they could think of in your kind of prison, and I was told somebody who killed their family and chopped them up in pieces.
That's plausible.
And I'm thinking, that's really not medium in my book. You should be in a place no one ever sees you again. That's not a medium security deal. So your bottom line is, you're not dealing with people who wrote bad checks to the IRS. I think that's important to...
And we have everything in between that that range also. We do have people that were here for getting DUIs on federal grounds. Something as simple as that, all the way up to, you know, the heinous crimes you were just talking about.
Yeah, I was on a jury one time. A guy had been picked up drunk driving on a military base, and he was in big trouble. That was federal, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we get everything from that on up to the little pieces you were just talking about.
Yeah.
That's accurate of the camp also. There's just it's not just white-collar criminals at the camp. You have drug smugglers and things of that nature.
And the camp for I mean, I just always assume, because really, why would people know that much about prison? So what is the camp, when you say you guys have a camp, just tell people what that means. I mean, most people get the idea of prison because you see that in a movie, but what's camp?
So the camp is a minimum security camp, and there's no fences, and the inmates are used to do tasks around the institution. They have institutional jobs that they do, but they are minimum security inmates.
Wow. And do they go back to the prison at night? Is the camp a daytime thing?
The camp is all the time. They stay at the camp.
Oh.
It's an adjacent building.
Okay. Seems like camp would be better than being at prison if you're an inmate.
They have a lot more freedom, and occasionally they have outside projects in the community that the campers will go and participate in.
And these are different than the guys who used to be our fire crews, right? Or maybe not.
Yes, they're different because we're federal.
Okay.
Yeah, the fire camps are...
They're state.
They're state, yeah.
But you guys don't pitch in on that? That's not part of this crossover?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. So,
we have done projects out in the communities. They've helped restore the local school system out here. They've helped in other areas throughout the community. They've helped out at the local landfill. Any project that the community has, they can apply through the institution by contacting the warden's office and requesting an outside detail to go and do that. And whatever the project length time is, they'll find inmates that have the proper security level and the custody level, and then they can assign them out there. They come, you know, by day, go out there, do the projects, help the community out, come back.
You know, you don't hear very often of folks that jump the program and escape. Does that just not happen very often up in your area?
It does on occasion. We have had a few here.
Okay.
But, you know, I think, like we talked about, there's much more freedom here, so I don't think any of them want to spoil that too much, and, you know, because once they get caught, which they will, they'll end up you know, in a higher security facility.
Right, right. Yeah, don't mess up a good thing. But, you know, they're not the sharpest knives in the
but
drawer.
But we're talking about criminals, who got caught.
Yeah.
So the upshot of today really is not from the prisoner side. It's from the guard side. That was my real interest in this topic is I don't think people realize you wouldn't think that guarding federal prisoners would be a thing you would starve for resources. You'd think, hey, you know, that's an important thing. We need to keep these people off the street. I mean, we have so few people going to prison anyway. You know, if these guys are deemed bad enough to be in prison, you'd think you'd want to, you know, take care of the people who look out after them. And that's, so I guess that's kind of our launching pad there. I don't know where you guys want to start with that, but there are some real issues in the Bureau of Prisons with staffing and shortages and resources and all that stuff.
Right. So around 2016, they actually did a staffing reduction, and then we had hiring freezes along the way there. And our institution in particular, we had buildings shut down. Our staffing authorization was lowered. Since then, obviously, the things that are happening at the border, the political climate's changed. And they opened buildings back up without ever getting the reauthorization for the correct positions that are mandated by the Bureau of Prisons' actual policy. And so if you use that mathematical calculation that's in their policy, we should be at 161 correctional officers, and we're floating right about 50% of that.
Wow. So there's a real safety issue, if nothing else.
It's stretching the officers out fairly thin, but it's also affecting other areas of the institution. Part of, you know, incarceration is rehabilitation and getting inmates to go to programming and educational classes, recreational things, to become, you know, more functional in society when they do get out, when they are released, and those staff are being taken away. So a lot of the programming, if it is still running, it's ran with, you know, half to a third of the staff that it should be ran with. The classes aren't running fully like they should be. It takes a lot of the whole institution kind of pulling into one to even keep it running. Mm. Those are the things that we've been trying to do, is reach out to different congressional leaders, maybe get some action taken to help with hiring, to help keep up with the economy changes that we've been faced with.
All right. And what types of programs can they enlist in when they're in there and they're qualified and all that? What is offered for the inmates?
Almost anything that you could imagine at a local community college. They do courses through local community colleges. They do skills building. They do welding. They've done
the GED course.
GED courses.
We have a truck driving course.
Wow.
There's one for construction, building, learning how to build and frame out houses and those kind of projects, so that they're leaving with a skill.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's funny, on the outside, the trades are really hungry for those types of workers. It doesn't seem like a lot of the younger folks are signing up for that type of training. So I would imagine when these guys get out, there's probably jobs available for them.
Right, and it's not helping them just as much as it's not helping us by pulling the staff members that are supposed to be there. You know, providing that education to them, providing that skill set, they're being pulled to go fill in as a correctional officer for, you know, half or more of their work time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no kidding. Well, we've got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I know that there are, I realize this is one of those topics that has a lot of detail, but I think that if you guys are good with it, you know, kind of mentioning some of the classification of how your, because I was surprised about that. I was thinking prison guards were prison guards, the librarian was librarian, the cafeteria people were the cafeteria people, and I was surprised to learn that, that a lot of that is being kind of morphed all into one thing to make it look like the coverage is good, when in reality, not so much.
Right.
So let's come back with that. Our guests, Josh and Lanny, hang on for us up there. And I don't know if you're in Susanville, but you're near Susanville. So anyway, thanks for sticking on with us. We're talking about prison. And you can find us at
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
A little closer indeed to prison. So talk to us about some of your staffing stuff, if the timing is good for that.
Yeah, so you touched on it right before the break there. You were talking about kind of counting everybody into the numbers that they use. And they do that. All Bureau of Prisons employees receive the same initial training when they go to Glencoe, Georgia. And after that, you kind of step into your own individual skill sets. So they use everybody's a correctional officer first, kind of phrasing. When you're an actual correctional officer on the floor, you're in a housing unit alone in a medium security prison. So you have, on average, 1 to 120, I believe, is about the average right now. One staff member to 120 inmates.
Nice.
Which the capacity for the housing units is 128. So,
wow.
So in a housing unit, you've got one guard and everyone else is a prisoner, and that's it?
That's correct. One correctional officer to 120 average inmates.
Let's not put too fine a point on that. That
no,
doesn't
that
sound...
Doesn't sound that doesn't, safe to me.
It doesn't sound healthy.
No.
Yeah. So if something happens...
So outside of that, you have your, like, unit team employees,
right.
And then you have your neighbor officer who's next door. The buildings, the way they are, they're essentially, you know, anywhere between 1 to 2 security doors separating you and them. So there are staff that aren't excessively far away, say.
Okay.
But there are other ones that are across the compound, which are... You know, going to have to take a sprint to get there during actual incidents.
So, like other things that you guys take kind of take for granted that we wouldn't know is, okay, 120 people, are the 128 people in the unit, are they all locked in little rooms, or are they all wandering around?
No, so during the programming hours, when we come in, your day watch example, they come in, they unlock the housing units, and... The MA population is out for the day at that point.
Oh, terrific.
You know, barring any lockdowns. But they're out. They go to education. They go to food service, their meals. They go to their welding classes if they're open. They go to recreation if it's open. Ideally, the idea is to keep inmates employed, doing jobs throughout the institution, and to get them educated in skill sets so that will be beneficial when they release.
So are they when you say they open up and unlock, do these inmates are they assigned to go to a certain spot? I mean, or are they free to just roam around?
Is it like TV where they're all sitting there at the little picnic table things, you know, that are hooked to the floor.
Are they required to check in when they're out?
So they are. There's the housing unit's like a big open flat, essentially. And they have their computers where they can contact their families through by email. They have telephones out there that they can use. We have controlled movements in which we'll open up movement to go from one area to another area within the facility. So we'll open up a movement like for the morning meals, and all inmates from the housing unit that want to go eat breakfast, they'll leave during their time period, go eat, and then they come back. The ones that are assigned to work details, they'll go out on those same controlled moves, and they'll go to their, whether it's facilities or if they work in education as a tutor or just an assistant, they'll go to those duties, and then they'll return when that job or task is completed.
Right. So what do they do when they get out? Do they go to like a job board and look for their name and see where they're supposed to go? How's that work?
No, they actually try to set it up semi-realistic to the real world outside, where they bring an application to a detail supervisor. So if I'm the plumbing supervisor, and they may have plumbing skills or he's interested in learning them, he brings a resume and a request to work to that staff member, and then they'll sit down with that inmate, look at the skills, if they have an opening available for them to come to work, and then they get assigned, and that's their work detail.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, do they get compensation for the time they're working, or is that just part of their program?
Yes, they do. It's all it's a multi-graded system. I believe there's four grades, and depending on skill sets and time that they've been doing it, the grades change.
Mm-hmm.
So, at any given time, I'm back to the numbers again. There's one of you and 128 people basically moving around. Because I've been to Pelican Bay, been to the shoe over at Pelican Bay, but anybody who's out of their cell has, I don't know, I might be exaggerating, but it felt like five guards, like two, three, five, I mean, a lot. And so when I was there, like, we stood against the wall and then they went by. There was no, like, everybody roaming around. There was no open movement like that.
Right. So Pelican Bay, I believe, is one of California's maximum security facilities. So that's why you'd see the increased correctional officers with each individual inmate. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, they'll be in the housing unit with one officer. They go out to recreation, and out in recreation with our population around 1,500, potentially you could be up to like 750 inmates out there with one, maybe two recreational correctional staff out there.
What?
Wow. So what happens if a fight breaks out or, you know, there's some problem? I mean, you got two guys out there that are supposed to remedy the situation?
Well, typically you would have additional staff throughout the institution that would be able to respond to the incident. So you would have the extra unit team people, the extra educational staff, the front office staff. When we're pulling those staff and putting them into correctional officers, you diminish the responding staff.
Sure.
Significantly. And we've had incidents where people are responding and they're looking up and they're, where is everybody? That is everybody.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, something breaks out and the help shows up and it's the cook. I mean, it just doesn't sound like a...
It sounds dangerous.
It does sound very dangerous.
It just sounds dangerous. I mean, just all day long.
Anything
for you guys.
Happen.
Well, it's like so when you're talking about the cooks, they're law enforcement, correctional officer, first employees also. And then they have their own work details. So if there is an incident, food service is securing their doors, you know, and they're...
Oh, that's true. I mean, they can't just run away.
Own, so, yeah. Right. So they're actually having to take care and secure and try to limit anything from happening in their area.
Yeah.
So, Lanny, you've been at this a long time, probably like almost twice as long maybe as Josh. So you guys have an interesting kind of a perspective. Time, you know, over time, has it always been that way? Like, has it always been that way, Josh, in the time you've been there, and Lanny, is it different now than it was when you started? Like, what's the continuum on this thing?
It's continued to change since the time I came in. It's much different now than it was back in 2001.
Well, you had mentioned earlier, one of you mentioned that the political atmosphere has changed. What do you mean by that?
I could tell you this. In December of 2018, President Trump signed the First Step Act law. Basically, it allows the prison staff to assess inmates in 13 categories identified. Those 13 categories are anger, antisocial, cognitions, dyslexia, education, family, finance, medical, mental health, recreation, substance abuse, trauma, and work. So those categories require staff to teach classes in those categories. So inmates, prior to that, they get 54 days a year for good conduct time. This program, or this law that President Trump signed in, basically allows inmates to gain up to 15 days a month for credit.
And so that's reducing their sentence 15 days?
Or up to 15 days a month.
Okay.
So you got inmates serving less than 50% of the time. And so as soon as an inmate has a shorter sentence, as soon as he gets there, he's basically already getting released to the public.
Yikes.
So those categories are not even really being met. You know, the basically releasing inmates that don't have the skills that the law was intended to give them.
Which explains why they're
staff members
right back.
Right. And we don't have the staff members available because they're filling in correctional officer spots instead of being able to teach these classes and being able to actually go through correctly and assess the inmates, you know, at what stage they're at, what actual needs they have. They're not here long enough, and we're short-staffed, so we're not able to actually fulfill the requirements in whole.
And basically, because the Bureau of Prisons didn't implement the things needed for this law, you have inmates getting released right now that never even programmed in those categories, yet they're just giving them a time as if they did participate in those categories.
Oh. Well, how does...
Yeah, how's that work?
Yeah, what's up with that?
That's written into the law that they get credit even if they don't participate?
No, that's the Bureau of Prisons. That's what they've done.
Oh. Wow.
So this is my personal opinion, I think in the next few years, I think you will see an influx of crimes.
Well, yeah,
We were at a meeting at the regional office for the Bureau of Prisons, and we were talking to the Correctional Programs Administrator, and he was talking about how successful sending inmates on home confinement was. And I said, "Is anybody checking on these guys?" And he goes, "No." I said, "That's why it's successful. That's why these guys are not violating their conditions of supervision."
Yeah, because nobody knows.
They're not checking on them.
Yeah, nobody checks on them. Nobody knows. And it looks like they're doing fine. Yeah, you know, I'm all for rehabilitation. I really think it's important that when they get out, they have a skill. They can participate in a trade and make money and, you know, get back on track. But if they're just releasing them,
but that's
on
not
a point
their goal.
System,
yeah.
and they aren't getting the skills they need to. Not return to a life of crime. That I agree. I think we're going to see a huge rise in the crime rate. Have they? What's their view on that?
That's a question you'd have to ask
the mysterious gods at the Bureau of Prisons.
Wow. When we were talking about earlier in the staffing, we were talking about one of our buildings were closed down. That building was actually closed down due to a failing roof structure in which water was leaking into the building, the main housing area. And we have that same condition going on now in other buildings where we're actually providing inmates with trash bags and tape where they're putting it on the walls to divert water through their cells, their living quarters, over to the drain. And
well, that sounds
the exact
fancy.
Same reason the building, the other building was shut down previously, but this time they won't shut anything down, which would bring us back to our correct staffing level, by the way. And we're being told that that's because the Bureau of Prisons, after the closing of the private prison facilities, is approximately, last time we were given a number, was approximately 7,000 inmates over physical capacity. So essentially anything that has a roof, a bed, is going to get an inmate.
Mm. Wow.
So is that because they aren't making those repairs because they don't have contractors to come in and do it, or they don't have a budget to do it? Why are they not making the repairs?
It's probably both. With the budget that wasn't passed for however long that was, funding was going on a continuing resolution, so it was kind of month by month. And those are big projects. They actually have to put them out for bidding by federal law. So those projects do take time, but it's a matter of the overpopulation due to the closing of the private prisons. There's nowhere to put these guys.
Sure.
So we're running at full capacity while we're running at, you know, half staff. It's not a good environment. It's not conducive to working conditions, and it's not conducive to the inmates being rehabilitated and coming back out.
No, that's just that's a crazy recipe for disaster. Let's take a really quick break.
Burnout.
Oh, I can't even imagine the staff burnout. When we come back, let's stay on that, because honestly, that's the part that I guarantee you the public doesn't know. I mean, these people go to prison, everybody's mad they get out too early, that they're not getting rolled up for the crimes they commit and all that. But I think out of sight, out of mind is where you guys are unfortunately being shelved in that little space there that we don't know anything about. We'll come back and chat with you some more about that. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Was nice, the party was bumping.
Hey,
and everybody having a ball.
Ha, ha.
Until the fellas started in calling.
V-I-O.
And the girls respond to the call. Ha, ha, I had a boom and shout
out. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I'm so tired of losing. I got nothing to do at all.
Turned out much of my misspent youth was listening to songs that would have been terrific for a show about prison. Who knew?
Yeah, who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, this is just so crazy, you guys. All right, so go back onto this staffing thing and you know, let's keep focus there. You've got people that are being classified at, you're all classified as, oh, I used to know this, you told me once before, you're all classified as correctional officers, is that correct? Is that right?
We're all federal law enforcement correctional workers.
Correctional work. But there used to be a distinction between the people who were actually, like, the librarian, the cook, and the people who were guards in the units or the pods or whatever they're called, right?
Well, the Bureau of Prisons took a different approach than what most people are used to in state and other even county facilities, where in those facilities, in those systems, the correctional officer is the law enforcement officer, and he's the one that's there to respond and react to incidents within the facility. The Bureau of Prisons, they've kind of taken the backwards approach to that, and they've made everybody the law enforcement correctional worker, they call it, and then you have duties on top of that. So that's how they get away, and they say that their numbers are, you know, X to every 15 inmates. So if you go by that number, our staffing ratio to inmates looks much better on paper than it actually is, because those staff are doing their own things, have their own skill sets and specialities that they're doing, whereas the officers are the ones in the housing unit, you know, with the 128 inmates.
Yeah, on paper it makes sense. You know, everybody should be qualified to do the actual supervisorial type stuff, but
that isn't how that.
But when you give them all these other responsibilities that are primary, they're really not available.
But that would be no different than a school. That would be no different than in an elementary school.
Sure.
Where you have the custodian and the library people and the office staff, and everybody's classified as a teacher, so your student-teacher ratio is really low, but they're not all in the classroom. I mean, this doesn't work anywhere that I could think of.
No. Let me ask you this. Is there, obviously there's a shortage, are they hiring for these positions, or is there no budget to increase the
so staff? The entire Bureau of Prisons, not just FCI Herlong, is actively hiring. The problem that we're running into is the federal system is slow. You have to go through USA Jobs, which runs through the government, and then it runs through central office before it gets back down to the individual institution. And then on top of that, just the economy. And in our area alone, you have individuals that can make $5, $6 more an hour starting off at jobs that aren't law enforcement, that aren't being mandatorily held for overtime day in and day out, mm-hmm. where you get to that point of why would anybody come into this where they're going to make, you know, $6 less an hour. And then you take our location geographically, we're about an hour from Reno, or about an hour from Susanville, 45 minutes from Susanville. So it's, you have that commute on top of your day where you know that you're working 12-hour shifts right now, and those 12 turn into 16 hours, and now your 16-hour day is an 18-hour day with your commute.
Oh,
you're
making
$6 every one of those hours less than you would, you know, working downtown in Reno.
Yeah.
And no one's going to, you know, you don't have 128 guys who'd like to have you in a headlock under a bench.
Right. There's nobody at the warehouse who's going to be, you got to make sure there's nobody standing behind you, you know, when you're working at the warehouse.
Yeah. Okay. That makes no sense. And this is I don't even know how I want to ask this. Why is this so, why do you, and total, I don't know, fact or opinion, either way or both, why is this so difficult to get to the forefront and fix? Because it's obviously not a recent problem.
Or do they even recognize there's a problem?
Oh, yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
I think the recognition is probably the biggest factor with the agency. As I was explaining to you earlier, with our numbers here, we had an entire building closed down. They lowered our complement of staff for correctional officers that we were authorized to have. And then through the hiring freezes of previous administrations, and just over time, our numbers have dwindled down, and there's been no real step to do that. While they increased the inmate population, they opened the building back up, required more staffing to be able to house or to be able to staff that building, and we never got the staff in order to do that. So they just stretched us out then. We continue just being stretched thinner and thinner as we go along. Then the economy is coming up. for whatever reasons. So outside corporations are, they're able to compensate to get workers in, and the federal system is so slow to react to anything that we're just not able to. We're essentially not able to compete at all. The federal correctional officer pay bans were actually created in 1971 through OPM, and they haven't been changed since then. So correctional officers go up to a GS-8. Other federal agencies, which have the same type of duties, they're 11s, they're GS-12s. So that even the pay gap within the federal government itself is pretty significant.
And so when you, when those issues are raised, what's, I realize you probably get a variety of responses, but, is it we're working on it, we're not working on it, or we don't care?
Actually, it's kind of just flat out, that's not my job. They lowered our staffing complement down to 137 from 161, like the mathematical formula equates to. And when we bring that up and we ask about that, it's essentially, well, we don't make those determinations at the local level. Okay, who does? And then we contact the regional office, and it's, well, we don't make those determinations at the regional office. So we contact central office, and it's, hey, who's in charge of this? And nobody seems to know. It's in their policy. If I violate policy, I have a case on me for employee conduct. But who's holding the agency accountable for violating their own policy? And so when we try to speak with any congressional representatives or try to bring attention to the matter, the agency is standing back and they're going, we're staffed at this percentage. It's like, based on what? If you change what 100 means, you can make it look like whatever you want it to look like.
Right.
Yeah, sure. If you include everybody in the staffing complement that looks like people who are directly overseeing inmates, then it looks like they're fine.
But that's the other thing that the agency does. Is so they have what is called correctional services, which is what correctional officers fall under. But also included in that are your special investigative services, is your lieutenants, are your the captain's secretary, the captain. There's multiple other areas of the institution that are included in correctional services that aren't correctional officers, but they count them as a whole. So when you look at it, if there's 10 functions inside correctional services and 9 of them are staffed at 100%, the one that's staffed at 50% isn't going to be at 50 when you're averaging it out. So it shows us that closer to 75-80% staffed.
Well,
how much of this do you credit to the implementation of the First Step Act? I mean, it sounds like that was kind of a failure.
The First Step Act was a failure in implementation in the agency. Unfortunately, it took several years for them to even react to it. It's not because of the First Step Act. It's that it has been a long time coming. The First Step Act was just another weight on top of the shoulders of the staff members, essentially. But it wasn't like that was what caused this. This was all way back before then. 2016 is when it started. A previous regional director had actually made the comment that it's cheaper to pay overtime than it is to hire staff. And so that was what started the trend initially with that.
But specifically on the First Step Act, I did ask the question. I brought up the fact that people in these other disciplines are not being able to do their jobs. So what does that mean? And I was told that not having enough time is no excuse for not getting your job done.
Well, of course not.
Reality has nothing to do with your issue, sir. Wow.
Right.
Huh.
And then, it was brought up that you could be sued, the inmates could sue you personally if you don't have enough time to do your job.
Really?
Yep.
Back to Pelican Bay. I remember they were in the middle of a big lawsuit because some guy got a broken cookie in his lunch, and he had way too much time in the law library, so he was suing them over his broken cookie. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised at what they could sue you for, but What can they sue you for?
Well, when you start talking about, specifically what he's talking about is case managers. They are responsible for calculations and computating release dates. Things that actually affect the release date, I should say.
Okay.
So if they're not able to be in there to do that job correctly and to run those numbers, the calculations aren't going to be correct, right? So that's what they're getting at is, you guys are responsible for this. This is your job to do this. It's like, well, great. Well, you hired me to do a 40-hour-a-week job, but you're only giving me 20 hours.
Specifically, the act that was mentioned is called the Bivens Act, and it provides the inmates the statutory right to sue and recover damages from federal officials for violations of their constitutional rights. That's what he's talking about, but... You know, it's like they're leaving the staff out, hanging them out to dry. They're not covered, even though they don't have the time to do their job. They're just putting it on the staff member.
Well, if you're supposed to be monitoring 128 people, I would imagine it would be relatively unsafe for you to be sitting in a corner with a pen and a paper calculating everyone's release date.
And that's kind of the thing they're doing, too. So they're pulling these people out of their normal jobs. They're putting in the correctional officer post. And more often than not, they're being put in a housing unit that's adjacent to where they're working, where their normal work is. And so they're actually doing two jobs at one time, which obviously if you're doing jobs at the computer, calculating, running numbers, figuring those things out, you're probably not as attentive and doing, you know, inspections and searches and doing rounds and those types of things that correctional officers are generally able to do without having the other tasks of a case manager or a counselor having those things packed on top.
I can't even imagine how you could keep track of people with all of the, I mean, anybody who's even watched a movie that had a prison in it knows that there's tons of shenanigans go on in prison. I don't imagine your facility is any different. So you have all of that. I would think you would have to really, you'd have to have eyes in the back of your head. You should be paying attention all the time. I would think that would be safer for you and everyone else.
Yeah, it's ideal.
Yeah.
There was actually in the 2023, the funding bill, there's actually language in there from Congress to the agency. But it's pretty specific, and it says the Bureau of Prisons is directed to ensure that non-custody correctional employees spend 90% of their work week in their primary positions. And that was something that Congress put in the last funding bill. And the agency, I would say, as a whole, this facility maybe more so, hasn't been following that. They plan to follow that. We've asked them about it. So they're awaiting guidance from the agency. So part of us reaching out to congressional members is like, hey, you guys directed our agency to do this, and they're not. Something has to be done, whether it's funding to be able to compete in the economy, to hire staff. Something has to happen. We don't have anywhere to put the excess inmates that we don't have beds for. We're stretched out. And unfortunately, rather than working with local union labor, the labor unions, management are taking actions kind of into their own hands. They're setting up schedules. So here, for example, we had a schedule where we were doing 12-hour shifts with three on and 3 days on, 4 days off, 4 days on, 3 days off, giving staff a little bit of a break, you know, to enjoy their families and their personal lives. And the agency is unilaterally implementing a schedule next quarter where they're assigning 4 12-hour shifts to all officers.
Oh, that'll make everybody, that'll really help everything. Guys, I hate to say it, but we're at the top of the hour here. We've got to take a really quick break for news. We're going to come right back, and we'll pick up right where we left off. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't know when I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antonio.